It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. According to the Department of Homeland Security, a destructive Trojan horse malware program has penetrated the software that runs much of the nation's critical infrastructure and is poised to cause an economic catastrophe. This report surfaced on the heels of a cyber warfare conference in New York where experts warned of shifting cyber tactics. Reporter Andrew Conti was there as part of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review's ongoing series, Cyber Rattling, The Next Threat. He joins us now in Studio A. Andrew Conti, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Andrew Conti, explain what this so-called Trojan horse program is all about and who is behind it.
So this whole issue is what really got my attention from the very beginning. When I first started hearing about cyber stories, I went to a lot of the experts, intelligence folks, and top lawmakers, and these people were genuinely freaked out. And this is what was freaking them out, was that we have all of these industrial systems out there across the country that run power plants and factories. And, you know, basically everything has a computer system that runs it. And they're all vulnerable to attack. And the thing is that they were written, the software for them was written at a time when nobody was thinking about this might be a point of attack.
It was talking like 20, 30 years ago maybe?
Right. Yeah. And it's a lot of the things are carried through then as well. So, you know, you've got a power plant that maybe came online 20 or 30 years ago. It's got this operating system. And yet the concern is that what if somebody plants, in this case, so it's Trojan malware. And that just means that it comes in as perhaps an email or you get a user to click on a website. And then it downloads the malware onto your computer, and then that infects everything and allows the hacker to take a look at your systems, look for vulnerabilities. And the concern here is, what if somebody gets in and they map out your system and they find out that, hey, we can shut down your water facility, or we can turn off the power plant, or we can make the system go haywire all through a computer code, and it's something that an attacker could launch from anywhere in the world. It's very inexpensive and could have significant damage.
And we're talking about, you know, there's always the classic scene of the guy sitting at the control panel, you know, spilling his drink on whatever.
Homer Simpson, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that guy.
Right.
That's sort of the image we have of how these places are run, but that has changed with automation, and now you have computers running these things, and the computers, if they can be hacked, suddenly, as you're saying, the threat is that all the power in New York City could be turned off by some guy sitting or woman sitting in Russia or China once they penetrate the system.
Well, right. And so the Americans are really concerned about this because Americans are really good at this, right? We started this whole thing. A lot of people believe that anyway. Nobody really knows where this virus called Stuxnet started. But it's when the Iranians were trying to come up with uranium for nuclear weapons, the United States or somebody, nobody's taken credit for it, but everybody believes it was the United States
yeah,
and Israel, launched a computer code that attacked the system and caused the centrifuges to spin out of control. So they spun really fast and they slowed down and they just – it wrecked the whole system, and it did it in a way that the engineers who were sitting there watching it, as we were talking about, had no clue what was happening. And before they realized what happened, the whole system had spun out of control and it had set back the Iranian nuclear program by months, if not years.
So this is something that's widely believed that the United States did. And you mentioned in one of your stories that the United States has its own reasons for keeping the lines around cyber warfare a little opaque. Talk about what those reasons are.
So that was the message at this conference I attended in New York, and it was all high-level people representing, you know, banks and the military and, high-level computer systems, computer security systems. And that was sort of the message, was that, well, the United States, if we step out and we make too big of a noise about this and complain about all these other countries that may be attacking us or hackers around the world attacking us, it will draw light to the fact that the United States also has a strong offensive capability for computer attacks.
So, and What do these hackers? Who are they? Are they? Do we know for a fact that they are Russian?
Well, you kind of when you go and you think about warfare, like kinetic warfare, regular warfare. You always think, well, you know who's attacking you. You see the tanks coming, or you see the jets in the sky and you know what's happening. What's happening with the cyber warfare is that you don't necessarily know where it's coming from. You can make some guesses. Sometimes the hackers will leave little messages in the code. Like we had a story just recently. The FBI here in Pittsburgh is onto a new type of malware. You know, they wrote before – they brought indictments against the Russian hackers earlier this year. You and I talked about it in the – the idea was that there were these Russian hackers that were going in and stealing mm-hmm. from people. And so they shut down that whole system. But now they've got a new type of malware. It's called DYRE. It's D-Y-R-E. Well, the hackers wrote into the code. They sent a message. People started calling the malware by different names. And so they wrote a message that said, I'm DYRE. Call me by my real name. And then they also wrote into it, glory to Ukraine. And so it was a question for the analysts look at it, well, is this coming from Ukrainians then, or is it coming from Russians who are trying to blame the Ukrainians?
And so the idea is to confuse whoever's on the other end of the message.
Well, yeah, you don't really know. I mean, is it in that case with the shifting alliances in Ukraine and Russia, we've seen a lot of the hackers that even when the feds here in Pittsburgh brought down that system and brought indictments against the Russian hackers. It was actually happening while the actual fighting was going on between Ukraine and Russia, right on the border there. And they were going in and trying to do this shut down servers at the same time there was actual warfare going on. And so that's where it starts to blur. Like if you've got hackers that are attacking major corporations in the United States, they're hitting PNC Bank. That happened a couple of years ago. And at what point does it become, well, these are just hackers that are doing it for a criminal basis, or is it on behalf of a country? That's where it becomes blurry.
Is this like when the United States propped up bin Laden because we wanted to get the Russians out of Afghanistan? We invented, even though we don't seem to want to, for obvious reasons, want to take credit for it, we came up with this type of warfare. The United States became the preeminent cyber warfare nation, and now it's being used against us. So is it basically that we have created a means for us to be attacked?
That's the fear. Right, exactly. That's what's freaking people out. But, you send these viruses out there into the world. You show the capability. When they hit that Iranian nuclear facility, it showed to the entire world that this could be done. It was, some of the top intelligence folks I spoke with said that was a never come back from moment. That you've crossed the Rubicon and now you're in a whole different type of warfare. But now the concern is, well, now the world knows this. And what if they turn it back on us? There was an incident shortly after that where Saudi Aramco, big oil field and big oil company in Saudi Arabia, they were attacked. Their computers were shut down, and it shut down a refinery. And so it proved the capability again that this can happen. And what if it happens, on a massive scale in the United States?
Well, yeah, oil is good. Anything that happens to oil, big oil, is going to get people's attention.
Right.
Here we're talking with Andrew Conti, a reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, about some of his reporting as part of the ongoing series, Cyber Rattling, The Next Threat, and looking at the most recent threat to the U.S. infrastructure as identified by the Department of Homeland Security. And, of course, Andrew, we had last May the story where in Pittsburgh, U.S. Attorney David Hickton brought indictments against Chinese military hackers saying they'd stolen documents from companies like U.S. Steel, Alcoa, Westinghouse, among others. So how did we know – if you're saying it's pretty hard to identify the people that are involved in these recent attacks. How was the U.S. government – how was the U.S. Attorney's Office able to identify that these were in fact Chinese military hackers?
It's really like old-fashioned sleuthing. You go back and you look for – any kind of clue you can find, and then you try to tie it back. So in that case, they found one of the hackers was using the handle Ugly Gorilla was his online name. And then they started looking for, well, where else does Ugly Gorilla turn up? And so they started piecing it together. And it turned up that, this guy, they were able to trace it back to where he had registered some of the websites that they were using to launch the hacks. And they were then able to trace that back to a real person and say, this is a real person who works for the Chinese military, and we believe that based on all this evidence, this is the guy. And you know, that's what happens in all these cases. But it's also the defense for, say, the Russian hackers. When the feds catch somebody and they say, all right, you're, you know, this guy, Bad B, is the, you know, one of the handles. And so Bad B put out all these cartoons. And every time he hit, you know, targets in the United States, he would tell people like, you know, hey, we're not only are we taking money, but we're hurting the U.S. economy and we're helping the Russian economy. That's fine. But then in real world, when they catch this guy and they say, we think you're Bad B, it's up to the U.S. government to try and prove then to a jury or to a judge to say, hey, this is all the evidence we put together. We believe that Bad B is this guy and here are the reasons why. But oftentimes, you know, that's why these guys get short sentences when they come up for trial, because it's like, well, you know, we think it's the guy, but how do you prove it?
And so we need to find more clues before we know definitively that it is in fact the Russians who are involved in this latest incident?
In this case, my sources are saying that they are very convinced that it's the Russians that are behind it, or Eastern Europeans anyway. That it's, and then it, that's the other question. It's not the Russian government, but is it people in Russia who are allowed to operate without being, you know, penalized by the government?
Don't we believe? Isn't there enough to indicate that this would probably be the Russian government behind this?
That's the question. Nobody knows. I mean, in the case of the Chinese, they were able to say, "Hey, this is a Chinese military unit. These guys are operating on behalf of the Chinese military." Mm-hmm. It was very closely aligned. Those indictments that they brought here in Pittsburgh were clearly targeting the Chinese government. In this case, is it just the Russian government allows these guys to operate, or they operate in the country and nobody knows?
It's
a gray area. It's blurry.
Yeah, and you would think that the Russians, you know, that the government, if they haven't actually, sanctioned this, that they're not necessarily upset about it, because this is a potentially a great weapon. I mean, this is like taking a page out of the old Cold War playbook, right?
Well, that's the concern, right? That you are able to launch these attacks. You're able to do it secretly without anybody really being able to blame anything. That's one of the first things that happens when there's an attack, is the victim is trying to decide, well, who's attacking me? Where is this coming from? Who launched this against me? Why would they do this to me? And so you're trying to figure that out. At the same time, you're also trying to stop it from happening.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and our guest is Andrew Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Have we gotten into describing the software that's been hacked? To sort of give people a clear idea of what that is?
Right. So it's older – in most of this case, what they're concerned about in this latest malware is it's older systems that run, you know, nuclear power plants and coal-fired power plants. It's the systems that basically
operate. That's scary.
Everything happens. Right. Yeah, exactly. The interesting thing that's come out of this too that was fascinating when I was in New York is that Pittsburgh is really starting to turn up on the map as the place where – the defense is taking place. That, you know, in cyber defense, Pittsburgh is becoming known as the place where these corporations are turning to for help and banks are turning to, that they're looking at, you know, the experts we have here at CMU and the FBI and, you know, the federal government. They have – there's a lot going on here that the public's not even aware of that is all designed to protect these computer systems, you know, for individuals but also for large corporations.
We were talking about the case last May where indictments were brought by U.S. Attorney David Hickton against the Chinese military hackers. Do indictments deter hackers? I mean, what is the whole point of that exercise?
There was a lot of discussion about that at this event that I was at in New York. The question was, you know, does it make a difference? And people were saying, well, you know, we don't really know. How do you know? What do you measure it against? And we may not know for years. But they also seemed to feel that it was important that the United States was finally saying, hey, enough is enough. That the attacks had become so brazen where the hackers were walking in, taking whatever they wanted, you know, looking at the files and saying, okay, we want this, we want this. In the case of the one solar company, they were actually negotiating with the Chinese on fair trade policies. And at the same time, it's believed the Chinese hackers were reaching in and looking at, one, all their trade documents, and then also all their trade secrets. They were going in and figure out how they had put their factories together. And so say you're a company, you've invested in all this R&D to put up a factory, and somebody else comes along and they take the plans for it and they are able to build the exact same factory without all the R&D behind it, well, now they can undersell what you're doing, right? They can do it for much cheaper and sell the same exact thing.
And what are the shifting cyber tactics that experts are warning about in terms of that just that blurry line talking about?
It's amazing that the type of malware we were talking about before, Dire, that the FBI is really hot on here in Pittsburgh now, it relies a lot still on people clicking on emails, you know, and you get this email that says, hey, you know, we screwed up your invoice and here's, you know, you need to click on this software to open the invoice. Or in the case of law firms, the typical ruse is, you know, hey, we've got an RFP, we're putting it out, and, you know, would you be interested in working on this case? Here are the documents, click, you know, to the files to open it. People open the files and that downloads the malware onto their computers. So it's still, and a lot of the experts are telling me that it's still about educating consumers. Like, don't click, if you don't know who the email's from, don't click on the attachment. It's such a big, important thing.
Why is it taking, I mean, we've been hearing this for what, at least a decade. Don't open these attachments from an anonymous sender. And why is it that people are so slow to get the message?
Yeah, it's funny. I was asking about that and they were saying, you know, as humans, we've sort of, we know what it's, you know, we're able to identify threatening behavior when we see somebody, you know, we're physically with somebody. We can kind of say like, oh, this seems like a threatening situation. I'm going to, you know, change my own behavior. But online, we still haven't evolved to the point where we can say like, oh, this seems like a threatening email. It comes in and you think, oh, this seems benign. It seems fine. Or, you know, maybe they've attached the name of somebody, you know, one of your friends. So it looks like it's from somebody you know. And it, you know, the hackers are very crafty at getting people to click on it.
And it's how do they figure out ways to, and, you know, how do they know so much about all of us, it seems?
Yeah, in a lot of the cases, it's just they're just sending out, you know, millions and millions of emails and waiting for somebody to respond, you know, waiting for that person to click back. And that's when they, okay, now you've clicked back and they found their way in. That's what happened with the Target case, right? So in the Target incident where they were able to steal all this retail information on Target's customers, it was because they were just going along hitting different vendors and they got to a vendor who had a contract with Target. And because of that, the vendor had, you know, access to all of Target's systems, had a password. So they were able to hit the vendor. And the vendor wasn't really suspecting that it was going to be a Target. You know, whoever heard of, you know, HVAC system, you know, here in Pittsburgh. Well, they hit the vendor and then that gives them a gateway to Target though. And the hackers didn't know. They weren't necessarily looking for Target. They were just looking for anybody. You know, they're looking for victims.
Just fishing around.
Yeah, looking to see what's there. And lo and behold, you know, it's a way into the Target.
What were some of the other things that came out of this conference in New York, this cyber warfare conference? It sounds like this is maybe, if not the first of its kind, one of the few times that experts have been brought together under one roof in one big city and sat down to kind of look at all the problems and potential scenarios that are out there.
It was the first time, actually, that they've done this, you know, the idea of warfare. And in this case, it was the other thing that came out of it is that there's this weird situation growing up between, you know, corporate private victims and governments, you know, or the U.S. government. So if you're a bank or a corporation, you get attacked, you know, how do you trust the government to go to the government and say, hey, I need help? And if you do, how much information do you give? And, you know, if you're a private citizen and you're being attacked and it's, you find that, it's the Chinese government that's now attacking me. You know, I'm a private corporation and it's a government that I'm up against. Well, what do you do in that case? You know, do you turn around and get the FBI involved and the United States government involved? And then where does it escalate from there?
And what is the answer to that?
Well, it's all blurry, you know. And what is happening is that in most cases, yeah, they have gone. When the attack gets bad enough, that's what happened with the banks. When they were under attack, they went to the FBI for help.
Yeah, I guess if I was being attacked, if I knew or had some strong indication that it was the Chinese government, I'm calling the FBI. 412-246-2002 to join the conversation with Andrew Conti. We have Paula in a car. Paula, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I hope you're being careful.
I am. I'm being very careful.
Good.
But I just was so blown away about the timing of your phone, your show, and what happened to me on Saturday. normally when my phone rings and it's an area code that I don't know or it's an unknown number, I never bother answering the call. However, on Saturday afternoon, I had a person in my home office installing some software, and this person is an IT specialist, so he was, you know, he was doing this as a paid service. And right after we had some issues downloading Microsoft Office 365, we were on the phone with them, and got that problem resolved. And immediately my phone rang, and it was a number, I believe, 202 area code.
I'm sorry, Paula. So your phone rings. We're sort of losing. You're going in and out a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, so your phone rings, and so what happens then?
You know, then I thought, okay, maybe it's one of those follow-up calls with customer service. How did we do? That sort of thing. And I answered the call, and there was a man on the phone. His name, he said his name was Wilbur, and he was a very sick Middle Eastern Afghan. And he told me that he's from Windows and that they're getting error messages coming back from my computer saying that there's a problem with my computer and I should go to my computer immediately. And I was very perplexed and puzzled. And so I immediately told the IT person who was still on my desktop working what was going on, and I gave him the phone.
We got to the part where this is a good story, Paula, but we gotta get to the punchline.
Okay,
here.
Okay, well, the crux is this guy was telling us that they controlled my computer, so that they could fix the error, and he went to this site that was on my computer and said, "See that error message." Well, the guy, being a computer expert, said, you know, "I don't buy into this. I'm sorry." And he hung up. But we asked him for his phone number so we could call him back. "Oh, give us your phone number. We'll call you back." And then we said, "No, I don't buy into this."
So Paula, sounds like you thwarted a cyber attack. Thank you for sharing that story. And Andy, talk about what happened to Paula here.
Yeah, so this is actually a common story that we're hearing a lot more of. What's happening is that, you know, these computer attackers are calling up and they're posing as companies. And in addition to that, they're also taking over U.S. phone numbers for real people. And so, we're also getting calls from people saying, "Hey, you know, my phone number is being used by hackers to try and initiate these calls." And so, you know, for someone like Paula, it looks like it's coming from someone in the United States when it's really a hacker that's overseas and they're trying to, yeah, they're preying on people to get them to, you know, turn on their computers. And we've actually had somebody call me. She didn't even have a computer, and you know, somebody called her and was like, "Oh, we're getting bad messages from your computer." She's like, "Well, I don't have one." So if you haven't reached out to somebody, they're calling you,
there's a problem.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
Exactly. And she was saying that how do they do this where they get a – this sounds really insidious. She was describing – Paula was saying that the phone number was coming up and it was a 202 area code, but it was – sounds like it was coming from outside the country.
Yeah, so they're
– So how do they do that?
They're able to take over the phone number and in some way, so it looks like it's coming from the United States, so it looks like it's a real person. In many cases, if she had called back the number, there probably is a real person there, but it's not the person that called her. So there's somebody with a real number there, and this is one of the new things that we're hearing a lot about from hackers, that they are doing this. To me, it's incredible because it requires a lot more effort, right? It's easier to get somebody to just answer an email. You could send out millions and millions of emails. In this case, you have to actually call, but the rewards are higher as well.
Well, here we are going into the big holiday shopping season, and a lot of people's information is going to be out there. Are retail outlets boosting their cybersecurity to avoid the problems of last year's holiday season? What are you hearing, Andrew?
Yeah, for sure they are. I mean, everybody that's what you hear at all these events is people talking about the Target situation and the fallout for what that meant for the CEO. You know, he lost his job over it. And so a lot of the top executives over the last year, that was a major wake-up call for them to say, "Hey, we need to do a better job of this. We need to figure out what's going on. But at the same time, you know, we've still heard over the last year, almost every week, there's a new case of, you know, some major hacking incident. On the way over here today, I heard there was an incident with the Postal Service, you know, the U.S. government's Postal Service, losing information on their own employees. Last week it was Home Depot. We heard, you know, more about the Home Depot story. These things continue to keep happening, but the retailers are very aware of it. They're definitely stepping up their systems, and they're trying to catch up and stay ahead. But the problem is, if you are, you know, if you're your target, you're trying to cover every possible entry point, and the hacker only has to find one way in. You know, if your target, they thought they had everything covered, probably, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't think their vendors would be the way in, and yet that's what it was. It was through a vendor that, you know, somebody at the vendor allowed the malware in, and then from there they were able to get all the way to every one of Target's point of sale systems.
It's a real challenge, it sounds like, and one that we're still learning about and trying to catch up to the tactics of. Andrew Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review joining us, and you can check out their ongoing series, Cyber Rattling, the Next Threat. We'll put a link to it on our website at WESA.FM. Andrew, as always, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Coming up, we will talk about going into the deep freeze later this week. Is it the work of the polar vortex? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Thank you.